From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
Yes, I'm living a good all the time. Don't drink no beer and no cheap wine. And I always flight, cause my money don't never run out.
Today, musician, singer, and songwriter Dom Flemons performs in our studio. Flemons used to be a member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a group dedicated to reviving the African-American string band tradition. He recently went solo and has a new album called Prospect Hill. Flemons plays old-timey music, blues, and early jazz. He also plays more contemporary songs as if they were from the 20s or 30s.
Song like Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard by Paul Simon. So, you know, I do it...
Well, Mama Pajama rolled out of bed and she went to the police station. Pop found out it's...
Also, tech contributor Alexis Madrigal explains why Pinterest has become a good place to search when you don't know exactly what you're looking for. First News. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Well, that got my attention when I first played Don Fleming's new album, Prospect Hill. It's his first album since leaving the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a Grammy Award-winning group extending the tradition of African-American string bands of the 1920s and 30s. Fleming sings and plays guitar, banjo, bones, harmonica, fife, and jug. His new solo album reflects his interest in old-timey music, blues, early jazz, and rhythm and blues. The album also includes a couple of original songs. Fleming grew up in Arkansas and now lives in North Carolina. He's brought several of his instruments with him and is going to perform some songs for us. Don Fleming, welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me again, Terry.
So I want to start by asking you to play a song, and it's a song that's on your new album. The song is called My Money Never Runs Out. Tell us a little bit about the song before you play it.
Well, My Money Never Runs Out, it was originally recorded by a fellow by the name of Gus Cannon, who went by the name of Banjo Joe. He was a black banjo player and a songster, and he also was a fellow who performed in blackface. So he was a black fellow who played in blackface, and so he had a very unique repertoire that reflected the popular music of the 1890s into the First World War.
Some people wouldn't touch music that had anything to do with blackface.
Well, you know, Gus Cannon's music is very interesting in the way that he was part of that generation that retained a lot of the same repertoire, but they took out words like coon and of course the N-word and darkie, and they took all those particular words out of the songs, even though they retained the musical material. So Gus Cannon was part of that, and he was kind of like in the lower rungs of the music industry compared to people like Burt Williams, who were on the top rungs.
So do the song for us. It's called My Money Never Runs Out. Oh. Well, after it's over, I'll ask you to tell us about the banjo you're playing.
Oh, sure thing. Okay. All right. Here's a little of My Money Never Runs Out.
Okay. Now there's a flirting yellow joker living round this town. He's just as lazy as a lazy cane be. Now as long as they flirt, boys, he hangs around. I love my hops, is he. Early one morning, his joker ran away. To roam the world was said. I believe I'll go back to bed, man. I give up my head. I don't care if I never wake up. Yes, I don't care if I never wake up till the birds is through with me. Now I'm coming around here with my big fold. I'm gonna run 'em up a tree. Nothing like a living like a money a king. Drink from a silver cup. I eat pork and pears. I eat out of my class. I don't care if I never wake up. Yes, yes. Boys was stacked high. I believe my soul would touch the sky. I polish people in the diamond dust, man. I don't care with this banjo bass, cause my money don't never run out. You rich fools, you are making me shout. Every good evening, this sweet old toast I shout. Yes, I'm a living a good all the time. Don't drink no beer and no cheap wine. And I always flate, cause my money don't never run out.
And that's Don Fleming's performing in our studio, and he does that song and his new album, which is called Prospect Hill. It is so much fun to hear that, and so educational to hear it too. So I'm going to ask you to pick the banjo back up and tell us about it. And was the style that you were playing a style that Gus Cannon originated?
Well, this style I was playing in is my own adaptation of Gus Cannon's style. He played with a five-string banjo. And when I started playing, I started with four strings. I had a good friend of mine who passed me a five-string banjo that he'd taken the fifth string out of. So I learned how to play all the songs I knew on guitar on the banjo. So, you know, I used to play songs like this, like a song like Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard by Paul Simon. So, you know, I'd do it more frantic and like a...
Well, mama pajama rolled out of bed and she went to the police station. Pop found out and began to shout. He started the investigation. Was against the law. Was against the law. What the mama saw was against the law. Ooh, well, the mama turned around and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. Papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rosie, the queen of Corona. Seeing me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Seeing me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
That's really great. That's so much fun. So that's how you learn to play banjo, by adapting like rock songs and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I used to just take all sorts of different stuff, and I'd experiment on the banjo or the guitar, and then I found out about open D tuning, open G tuning on the guitar, and I found that I could take different techniques I learned on the banjo, put them on the guitar, and then I worked them the other way around, putting stuff on the guitar onto the banjo. And that gave me my own sort of way of looking at the material. So when I got into old-timey music, a lot of the stuff is based on that, those same sort of notes and chord shapes and stuff like that. So I began to form my own style based on that.
So what first got you interested in the kind of music that you're playing now, which is music of the 20s and 30s and music as if it was from the 20s and 30s, playing more contemporary things in the manner of the 20s and 30s?
Well, I mean, it started out with my interest in oldies and
by oldies, you mean like doo-wop and stuff?
Like doo-wop, 60s rock, 60s pop music, 50s rock and roll. I also really loved a lot of documentaries, and so I watched a lot about these different styles of music.
So you were already out of your period.
I was in your 30s? Yeah, I'm 31 this year.
Okay.
And yeah, I just started pushing toward these styles that weren't particularly contemporary at the time. I also listened to other stuff like Green Day when they first came out, or Sublime, and just kind of groups like that. But acoustic music at that time, there just wasn't a whole bunch of it, unless like a rock singer decided to do an acoustic-y ballad number or something like that, or adult contemporary acoustic music. And so when I heard Bob Dylan's first record, the self-titled Bob Dylan one, that really blew my mind, made me think about guitar and harmonica. So I started doing that. I started learning, just everything that I could hear on the radio. I'm also a curious enough person, so when I got into records, I'd see these greatest hits albums of these doo-wop groups, and I just would look up each of the groups. I'd look up who were the Spaniels, what sort of songs did they do, and I'm just a sort of studious sort of person that's into that sort of stuff. So I just was doing that for 4 or 5 years. I was busking out on the streets. I was playing at the folk coffee houses in Phoenix, and I was going to college in Flagstaff, and so I just always kept all that stuff going. So when I went to the Black Banjo Gathering, I had all this knowledge in my head about how
the Black Banjo Gathering.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that is?
That was an event in Boone, North Carolina in 2005, and that was where I met Rhiannon Giddens and Justin Robinson, and we started the Carolina Chocolate Drops after that. And so that was at that time, I was just making up a style of playing music, and so then I had another transition point where when I moved to the South, I learned a whole bunch more about Southern music. I started working with Music Maker Relief Foundation, and I got to learn about why the music sounds the way it does. And so I learned those sort of little lessons in my own heart. And so over time, I've tried to develop my own style.
And you have.
Oh, I appreciate it, Jerry.
And it's a very eclectic style. So if you're just joining us, my guest is musician and singer and songwriter Dom Flemons, and he used to be with the Carolina Chocolate Drops, but he's now solo, and he's performing a lot of music from the 20s and 30s and onward, and his new album is called Prospect Hill. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more, and Dom Flemons will perform more for us. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, my guest is songwriter, singer, and guitarist, banjo player, bones player, etc., Dom Flemons. And Dom used to be with the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a string band, and now he's solo, and he performs a lot of music from the 20s and 30s, but also performed a lot of more contemporary music in the manner of that period. So I'd like you to perform another song that you do on your new album. And the song is called Have I Stayed Away Too Long? And I have to tell you that when I heard the song, I knew that it had first been performed by Blind James Campbell, because he'd said that in the liner notes. And I assumed he wrote that too.
Oh, it's the funny thing that I found was that he didn't write it.
No, I couldn't believe it when I read who wrote it. When I looked more carefully, Frank Lesser wrote it, and he wrote Guys and Dolls. And you didn't know that?
No. See, I saw the name and I recognized it, but I just assumed he was like one of the major Nashville country guys. And
he wrote
Guys and Dolls.
He wrote the musicals Guys and Dolls, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. He wrote a beautiful, almost like opera, which is called Most Happy Fella. He wrote Baby, It's Cold Outside and a gazillion songs. So, anyways, why don't you play the song your style, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it.
All right, well, here we go with Have I Stayed Away Too Long?
Have I stayed away too long? Have I stayed away too long? Now if I came home tonight, would you still be my darling? Or if I stayed away too long? Long distance out of town, call me to worry that maybe I don't wanna hurry back. Now I just stay out of town, worrying you no more. I know you found someone else to make you care. Now my dreams have gone wrong. My beautiful dream have gone wrong. Now if I came home tonight, would you still be my darling? Or if I stayed away too long?
So that's my guest, Dom Flemons, performing in our studio, and he does that song also on his new album, which is called Prospect Hill. When we left off, right before you started playing that song, we were talking about how it was written by Frank Lesser. And you said you'd assumed he was one of the Nashville songwriters. And in fact, Tex Ritter, I think, had a hit with the song. But I went on iTunes to see who else recorded it. Perry Como recorded it. So I listened to a little of the Perry Como version. It's like 180 degrees different from what you did. It's like a slow ballad and, you know, kind of middle of the road. And
yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that because the first version I heard was the one on the Blind James Campbell record, and I had no idea that it was recorded by anybody else. And so as I was putting the publishing together on the record, you know, you have to get the songwriter's name and everything, then I started finding out all the other versions that had been done of it, and it's really different what Blind James Campbell, and then for me hearing it, I tried to put a Hank Williams or a Honky Tonk sort of flavor onto it, or even also like a Big Joe Turner, that sort of feel on the song. And that's such a spins around in home and a whole bunch of different circles.
So you sing a lot of songs that you've learned over the years. You collect songs as well as recordings.
Oh yes,
and you, I'm sure, know a gazillion songs, but you write songs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote a song that really sounds like almost an answer song to the song that you just did. So the song you just did asked the question, have I stayed away too long? And the song that you wrote is called Too Long I've Been Gone, as if answering the question, yep, I have stayed away too long. Would you do an excerpt of that song for us and maybe tell us what inspired the song? Did the song we just heard inspire this song?
Oh, no. This song was, I wrote Too Long I've Been Gone maybe about a year and a half ago. I was just sitting in the hotel room one day, and I just started musing on the idea of when you're traveling a bunch, how lonesome you can get just for, you know, the same thing. Paul Simon did the same thing in, you know. Every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines on Homeward Bound. It was kind of a song like that. I tried to reach into make a folk song that would be a nice little message in there. I didn't want to get too deep on it. This whole album was an exercise for me to cut back on any excess things I was doing. And for too long I've been gone. I had about two more verses, but I cut all of them out because I felt like it told the whole story. And so I'll play a little bit of this one here.
Thank you.
Don't need no cup of coffee in the morning. I can get up fine. I can get up fine. Delia is a pretty girl, but she ain't mine. But she ain't mine. Take a little trip to the station. I'm bound to go. I'm bound to go. When I'll see my lover again, I do not know. I do not know. Too long, too long. I've been gone. Four white walls and a worried mind. That's all I have. That's all. That's all. And when I need someone to talk to, I just say, hello, wall. Too long, too long. I've been gone.
Nice, thank you. And that's Dom Flemons singing a song that he also does on his new album. The album is called Prospect Hill, and today he's performing for us in our studio. So the song you just sang, which you wrote, has a very kind of folk sense to it. You were in college in Arizona. Mm-hmm. You grew up in Arizona.
Yeah.
Well, you were in college in Arizona when you started getting into folk music. But you used to play in rock and roll bands, right?
No, I never really played in rock and roll bands. I always played solo.
Oh, that's so you were like doing a lot of busking.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I was doing a lot of busking. I'd play solo. I played for a while in a group called the Wild Whiskey Boys, and so I played harmonica in that group. But it was always guitar, banjo, and harmonica, and that was all I played until I came to North Carolina, and then I started playing the bones and the quills. And the bass drum, snare drum, all the drums, I played that in school. So that was like my actual formal training. So,
Were you in marching band in school?
Yeah, I was in marching band with bass drum. And then I played like auxiliary percussion. I played all the different, from timpani all the way down to suspended cymbal, triangles and all that stuff. So a good sense of not just the main rhythm, but what the auxiliary rhythm that you put on top of the main rhythm was. And that was something that was I didn't think about till later, like ideas of syncopation, subdividing rhythms and things like that. Those were all things that I just naturally had inherent within my own musical education.
Did you learn to love marches, being in marching band?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like another old song, I got to thinking about it. A song like Working at the Car Wash Blues by Jim Croce. This is the sort of stuff I used to do. So, like, when Jim Croce does, he says, well, I just got out of the county prison doing 90 days for non-support. Trying to give me an executive position, but no matter how smooth I talk, they wouldn't listen to the fact that I was a genius. So that's that style. But if I wanted to change into like a quartet number, I'd do, you know, well, I just got out of the county prison 90 days for non-support. Do-boo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Trying to get me in executive position, but no matter how smooth I talk, they wouldn't listen to the fact that I was a genius. Man say we got all that we can use. Got them steadily depressing, low down my missing, working at the car wash blues. So I used to do that. I used to take all styles that weren't the styles of the original artists, and I used to just do that. You know, and I would just, you know, just for my own amusement, I would do this sort of stuff all the time. So when I started getting into performing and reinterpreting traditional material, I tried to find material that wasn't the well-known material, because everybody's done a Robert Johnson number, and it's really hard to reinterpret that stuff because it's just so well-worn. I just tried to find people like, you know, that interested me, like Henry Thomas or Papa Charlie Jackson, Lead Belly, Charlie Patton, where there was a little bit of room to interpret their music so that I could learn it my own way, and then I could try to figure out how to put my own stamp on it. You know, that's the thing that every songster does.
Tom Flemons will be back in the second half of the show and perform more songs for us. Here's a track from his new album, Prospect Hill. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
One, two,
nothing in the world can make me snub you.
Polly, put the kettle on, kettle on, kettle on. Polly, put the kettle on.
Boil a teacup,
bread and buzz. Good enough for anybody. Bread and buzz, good enough for me.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. From America's Natural Gas. Learn how UPS is reducing emissions in communities with their growing fleet of natural gas vehicles. Thinkaboutit.org. And from Viking River Cruises, exploring the world in comfort, offering European cruises on Viking longships. More at vrc.com/radio. This is NPR.
Coming up, Dom Flemons plays a song on his vintage, big-headed, six-string banjo. Also, tech contributor Alexis Madrigal explains why the website and app Pinterest has become more than just a digital scrapbook. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Dom Flemons. He was a founding member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a band extending the tradition of African-American string bands. He recently left the group and has just released his first solo album called Prospect Hill. It reflects his interest in old-timey music, blues, and early jazz. He plays guitar, banjo, harmonica, bones, jug, and fife, and has brought some of his instruments to the studio. I was wondering if I could ask you to perform an excerpt of one of the songs that first got you interested, either in folk music or in music of the 20s and 30s.
Well, one of the things that really got me interested in a lot of the old music was a documentary called The History of Rock and Roll. And they had an episode about the folk revival.
Was this the PBS era?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. When I was watching that documentary, one of the first country blues musicians I got interested, they had a little clip of him, and it was Lightning Hopkins doing the song Mojo Hand, and I just loved the sound of it. It was, I'm going to Louisiana, I'm going to give him Mojo Hand. I'm going to Louisiana, I'm going to give me a mojo hand. I'm going to fix my woman's soul, she can't have no other man. And I love that intro.
So, you know, I can hear that you can, you're almost trying to channel the performers that you do and get their voice as well as their guitar style down. I guess if you have a really good ear, it's easier to do that, to really also copy somebody's voice. Like, if you have really good pitch, you can get somebody's voice better. You were telling me earlier, before we started the broadcast, that when you were performing solo early in your career, you would do imitations
of
performers.
Yeah. The idea that I had in my 16-year-old mind is that, see, I'd hear these songs and no one else knew what these songs were, so I tried my best to replicate them so that people would get a sense of the song as it was performed by the original performer. At that time, I didn't feel like I had any interesting stories. After being in the business now for 15 years just about now, I have some stories of my own, but at first I didn't really have stories, so I would tell other people's stories, and then, you know, I'd do like, I'll do a funny one of, I used to do Nashville Skyline Bob Dylan. I used to do, you know, most people know him as, with this voice. Go away from my window, leave at your own chosen speed. You know, but in Nashville Skyline, he started singing like, Piggy Dee stole my poor heart away. By golly, what more can I say? Love to spend the night with Piggy Dee. I used to do that. When I was 18, I got to see Dave Van Ronk, and I heard him do this song. And especially with Llewyn Davis coming out, now people know a little bit more about Dave Van Ronk, which is really beautiful to me.
Well, listen here, pretty papa, please get out of my sight. I'm a-calling it quits now, right from this very night. You've had your day, long stand around. You been a good old wagon daddy, but you done broke down.
But you were telling me that you also did Van Morrison.
Let's see.
Half a mile from the county fair, and the rain came pouring down. Me and Bully standing there with a silver half a crown. Hats are full of fishing rod and the tackle on her back. Oh, we just stood there getting wet. Well, our back's against the fence. And if I want to sing it like Van Morrison now. Oh, and the water. Oh, the water. La, 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 la.
You know, and I do things like that or, you know.
Did you ever have a hard time figuring out, but who is Dom Flemons?
I thought about it every once in a while, and I wrote songs at first. The first 5 or 6 years I performed, on top of doing other people's songs, I did my own songs too. But I got into the spot where I just really felt like doing songs that I liked playing. I just didn't feel like writing songs anymore. I just felt like, oh gosh, I'm not as good of a songwriter as like the great songwriters that I'd listened to. So I just focused on styles, and then for this one, I decided to creep a little bit of songwriting back into it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dom Flemons. He used to be a member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a string band that was reviving the African-American string band tradition, but he's recently gone solo, and he has a new solo album, which is called Prospect Hill. Let's take a short break, and we'll hear Dom Flemons perform some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dom Flemons, and he is a musician and singer and songwriter. He plays guitar, banjo, bones, and a bunch of instruments. And he's very interested in music of the 20s and 30s. He's a former member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, which was a string band reviving music from the African-American string band tradition. Now he's solo, and he has a new solo album, which is called Prospect Hill. One of the instruments you brought with you today is the largest banjo I've ever seen. I think there probably aren't many like this in the world. Does it have a name?
Well, you know, I just realized I'm going to start calling it Big Head Joe. Because someone was sitting in an audience at a show, and they just kept saying, "That's such a big head on that banjo. That's such a big head on that banjo." And I've been trying to think of a name, so Big Head Joe, I think, is going
to
be...
That's very good. Would you describe its size and how it compares to a regular banjo?
Well, it's an 18-inch head on here, and usually most banjos you see are maybe 11-inch heads in diameter. It has a very fancy pick guard, a very extravagant inlay, because this was actually made in Philadelphia. There was a small guitar-making studio that made this banjo. It's called the Clef Club brand banjo. I picked it up at the Retro Fret Guitar Shop in Brooklyn, and they couldn't find anything to specifically link the Clef Club brand with the Clef Club Orchestra, which was James Reese Europe's orchestra. But, you know, I'm taking a little bit of historical liberty by saying if there's the Clef Club brand of banjo, and this is a big banjo like you'd have in a banjo orchestra, I feel like it's at least a knockoff banjo that a professional musician had made for him, because it has a really fancy pick guard. It has a little holder for your flat pick. It came with a capo. It had lights that you could clip onto the truss rod so that you can heat the head of the banjo in case it happens to be a hot day and the skin gets moist and soggy. It has, you know, it has this little custom lights so you can just plug them in
like
there.
Like to dry it out?
Yeah, just to dry it out so that it can, you know, because if, see right now, there's not too much humidity, but if there was more of it, the skin would start to sink down and the notes would start to sound kind of mushy. And so I found out that was another thing that they had. They had little lights for professional banjo players to either have a little foot switch or they plugged it in or whatever it was, because it doesn't take a lot. You just have to put a little heat on it, and then the banjo's good to go.
So when was this first made?
This was made in they have it written down as circa 1924, and so this is an old vintage instrument here. That is just one of a kind, and I'm really glad to be the owner of it.
And it's much deeper sounding than a regular banjo.
Oh yeah, well, you know, for example here, a song that I've played for quite a few years is "Your Baby Ain't Sweet Like Mine," which is a Papa Charlie Jackson number. But on this banjo, this is a little bit more how Papa Charlie played it, and I'll sing it more like Papa Charlie too.
About my baby, but I can't tell you everything about my baby. It'll be possible to tell you everything. It wouldn't be possible to tell you everything. Everybody talking about the sweetie nowadays. I got the one with the sweetest ways. Your baby may roll a jelly fine. Nobody baby can roll it like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. She bake a jelly roll all the time. And when I'm feeling lonesome and blue,
my baby know just what to do. Yes, sir, she even calls me honey. She even let me spend her money. Never has a baby put me out though. She even buys me all my clothes. I don't wanna brag, I wanna put you in line. Your baby ain't sweet like mine, oh no. Your baby ain't sweet like mine.
Oh, that's great.
And so just to, for comparison's sake, I'll play it on the regular guitar. I'll play the same thing.
Let's see here.
Even between guitar, banjo. Everybody talking about the sweetie nowadays. I got the one with the sweetest way. See, it even has a completely different tone if
yeah.
I just played on this
yeah.
regular guitar. And that's always been the appeal of those instruments, is that it's tuned like a guitar. And it plays like a guitar, but it has a banjo quality to it.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. And
the big banjo's tuned like a guitar?
Yeah, this one's tuned exactly like a guitar. And see, so they sell smaller ones usually, like Deering, Gold Tone. All of them have their own versions of a six-string banjo. Rod Stewart did it when he was doing the Standards album. He really popularized the six-string. Johnny St. Cyr, who played with Louis Armstrong, he played a six-string. Danny Barker, the New Orleans player. It was really a New Orleansy instrument. The main proponents of it, that and Papa Charlie Jackson, who was another New Orleans guy, they played six-string banjo, but it kind of, once they electrified guitars, it really put the nail in the coffin on the six-string banjo, because sound-wise, it's not particularly a great instrument. Since this one's so big, it has a really great resonant tone, but smaller ones generally have bad intonation, and they're all like very mid-rangey sort of instruments. So in terms of recorded music, it tends to be a very hard instrument to record. So once they realized they could just have parlor guitars and electric guitars, they just dropped the six-string banjo altogether.
So an advantage of banjo before electrification was that it would cut through a little better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like six strings and like the resonators. Those are like the two types of big amplified, pre-amplified guitars that people would play.
So most banjos have five strings.
Yeah, most banjos have five string. I don't play five string all the time. I don't carry one with me. But it's four and six strings are my two.
And why four string?
Four was just because I started out on four strings, and I'm more comfortable playing it with four. And you know, but I know it's not the real way to play it. But I found that it's worked out for me okay after a while.
So there's a song that you do on your new album. It's called "But They Got It Fixed Right On," that I'd like you to do for us. And you do that on that really large banjo.
Oh yes, yeah. See now, because the song like "But They Got It Fixed Right On" is so ridiculous that I have to have this ridiculous banjo to go with it.
Tell us about the song before you play it.
Now the song is a type of song called a hokum song, which is like a song. The hokum songs are humor songs that are, they have double entendres, so they mean different, you know, two different things at one time when you say a certain phrase. And this was actually recorded and written by Thomas A. Dorsey and Tampa Red. And this was the type of music that Thomas A. Dorsey was doing before. He had actually a series of tragedies which led him to become a very, very much a God-fearing man. And he then wrote Precious Lord, Take My Hand and Peace in the Valley. And he actually made a larger career being a gospel songwriter. But beforehand, he and Tampa Red came up with the song Honey, It's Tight Like That. And a lot of these hokum numbers, he pretty much invented the style. And so I'll play it for you now. But they got it fixed right on.
With a Ford and a boy named Jim. He liked her and she liked him. Both broke down in a country bar, but they didn't get home until after dark. But they got it fixed, ain't no doubt. Nobody know what the song's about. Too bad that the news got out, but they got it fixed right on. A man with a peg leg and a gal named Sue broke his peg leg half in two. Only way that they could fix the leg was to get this gal to take a hold of the peg. But they got it fixed, ain't no doubt. Nobody know what the song's about. Too bad that the news got out, but they got it fixed right on. A gal walked into the butcher shop, grabbed the butcher's big ham hock. Butcher knocked her right off her feet. She missed his bone, but she got his meat. But they got it fixed, ain't no doubt. Nobody know what the song's about. Too bad that the news got out, but they got it fixed right on. Now there, Monkey and the Polecat made a deal to discuss the subject of sex appeal. Skunk won the argument right or wrong, cause his sex appeal was much too strong. But they got it fixed, ain't no doubt. Nobody know what the song's about. Too bad that the news got out, but they got it fixed right on.
That's great. That's Don Flemons performing in our studio. And that's a song he also does on his new album, which is called Prospect Hill. So your new solo album, Prospect Hill, is recorded, I think, the day of or the day after Pete Seeger died.
Yeah.
And being immersed in folk music as you are, what did he mean to you, and what did that coincidence of dates, how did that affect the mood when you were recording?
Oh, well, I mean, Pete's been an essential part of my life as a lover of folk music. Ever since I heard a demo version of him playing If I Had a Hammer, and that was really one of the first times I really thought about the banjo as an instrument that I liked the sound of it. Instead, you know, it'd be years before I actually played one, but I heard it and I liked the sound of that. And so Pete was... he was getting close to being on the way out. It wasn't looking good. I have a couple of friends, mutual friends, and I've met Pete several occasions. I never got to go out to his house, but I have enough mutual friends that I could hear it was something. He wasn't long for this world. And Guy Davis had signed on for the album. I'd known Guy for a lot of years.
Playing guitar on the album.
Yeah, playing guitar. He played harmonica on the record as well, and snare drum. And he had been visiting Pete the morning, the afternoon before Pete died. So he went on a red-eye flight the next morning to come down to the session. Pete passed away within that time. And he was also, you know, his mom, Ruby Dee, just passed away, too. And so he also had to...
Guy Davis's leave. Mom was Ruby Dee?
Yes. Oh. Ruby and Ossie are his parents.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ossie Davis.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was taking care of her, too. So he had to come down, you know, passed mom off to his sisters, and then had to leave Pete. Pete passed away. So it's like, you know... his heart was heavy with all that stuff, but he also came in wanting to work, and so he said, "Let's go ahead and do this." And I mean, that spirit comes through on the album. We got in there, and
it's so interesting that he was in this other place, this place of mourning and preparing to mourn, but the music on most of the album is really so lighthearted.
Yeah. It's just that's the thing about the blues and string band music's the same way. It grabs to a root and it brings you out of whatever spot it is, you know? Like you feel that feeling, and then you can project out that energy just through the songs, and it was joyful.
Well, Don Flemons, it's really been great to talk with you and to hear you perform. Thank you so much for being with us and for playing for us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Terry. And I just have to say that it's just such a great pleasure to be here again on the show with you.
Here's more music from Don Flemons' new album, Prospect Hill.
Well, it's too late. Can't get along with you, honey, babe. Too late. Seems that we've run out of time. I'll always remember the love we shared. I gotta get you, baby, off my mind. Run backwards and the seas run dry. You treated me like a fool and oh so cruel, but it's too late.
Coming up, tech contributor Alexis Madrigal explains why the app and website Pinterest is more than a digital scrapbook. It's becoming a place to conduct searches when you don't quite know what you're looking for. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. The website and app Pinterest is well established as a place where you can gather images from your computer or the web and pin them to virtual boards, each having its own theme. But Fresh Air's tech contributor, Alexis Madrigal, says Pinterest is more than just a digital scrapbook. He believes that Pinterest could become a legitimate competitor to Google when you're searching for something but don't know exactly what.
The Pinterest interface is simple. Just click a button, and any web page gets broken down into its constituent images. Any of those can be added to your own set of images known on Pinterest as a board. Other people can find those boards and copy what they like, or simply search through all the photos on the site. Pinterest didn't take off among tech-loving men in California. Rather, it was young women away from the coasts who initially flocked to the site to plan everything from simple dinners to weddings. Now, it has tens of millions of users who have copied billions of pictures onto boards about everything from macrame to sports cars. Pinterest is mostly known as a place people go to find things to buy or make. The company likes to say that Pinterest is about planning your future. But it's also just about seeing visually a bunch of interesting stuff on a theme, all in one place. So there are boards for wedding planning and child rearing and men's linen suits, but also for kittens and model airplanes and mountains. Some boards are just a mood, like monumental or cute or adventurous. Despite this popularity, Pinterest has never attracted the same kind of press or adulation as the companies that grew up around the same time, businesses like Instagram, Uber, or even Dropbox. Pinterest just isn't seen as a hardcore technology company that will follow the path of Google and Facebook. To some people, it doesn't feel like a world-shaping product. It's just a digital scrapbook, people say. But internet companies are valuable in large part because of the kind of data that they possess. And Pinterest possesses some really, really interesting data. The first part of it is that they're a repository of things that people would like to have or do. They're a database of intentions. And that has got to be valuable to marketers and advertisers. But it goes deeper than that. What Pinterest has created, almost unintentionally, is a database of things in the world that matter to human beings. While Google crunches numbers to figure out what's relevant, Pinterest's human users define what is relevant for a given topic. And because of that, they could become a legitimate competitor to Google, the world's most valuable internet company. That idea crystallized for me when I saw a heavy Pinterest user playing with the service. She looked up nature photography, then started adding descriptors: winter, ocean, African. Each of these adjectives brought up an entirely different set of pictures, each with its own collection of moods and aesthetics. If what you're looking for is a thing or a type of thing out there in the world, Pinterest is more likely to serve it up to you than even Google. Frogs, sneakers, cloud formations, volcanoes, subway graffiti, footy pajamas. Google will deliver web pages about these things, but Pinterest will show you a photo of the thing itself, and increasingly, the opportunity to buy it, or get to it, or experience it. By letting people copy and label images, Pinterest created this rich database of persons, places, and things. And they're just beginning to use that data to help people find stuff. With a programming team that's largely been hired away from Google, Pinterest has begun offering what it calls guided search. Pinterest co-founder Evan Sharp told me that guided search helps you find things you didn't know you were looking for. If Google is great when you know exactly what you want, Pinterest can help you figure out what you want. As you search, Pinterest will suggest tags that you could add to help narrow your query. Search for hats on Pinterest, and you might get fedora or baseball or church lady as suggestions. The lesson here is that the simplest things we do on the internet, when you multiply them by millions of people, create troves of data that were just inconceivable at any other time in human history. And in many cases, the companies who possess the data we've created over the past 5 years are still learning exactly how to harness it to do new things, whether that's making more money for themselves or delivering you up exactly the hat or photograph that you were looking for.
Alexis Madrigal is a visiting scholar at Berkeley's Center for Science, Technology, Medicine, and Society, and he's the deputy editor of TheAtlantic.com, where he also oversees the Technology Channel. Fresh Air's executive producer is Jenny Miller. Our engineer today is Adam Staniszewski. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Zillow, with homes for sale, historical pricing data, and photos available on Zillow.com or on their mobile apps. Zillow, find your way home. From Mira, publisher of The Good Girl, a debut psychological thriller novel from author Mary Kubica, available now. And from Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with New York Times foreign correspondent Rukmini Kalamaki about her investigation into Al-Qaeda's lucrative business of kidnapping for ransom. And we'll talk about the trove of Al-Qaeda documents she discovered in North Mali, documents left behind by the jihadists when they fled, and what they reveal about Al-Qaeda's operations. Join us.